People say America is the greatest country in the world. I decided to prove it. So I spent several years researching every civilization that has ever existed on planet Earth. And I found some interesting things.
I am here with my friend, Bill Federer, William Federer. William, thank you so much for giving me some time today.
Gail, great to be with you.
So tell me, your brain is so massive of all the information that you know, not only about history, but about the culture. And I'm just wondering, what can you share with me today that would help someone who feels like they're just stuck in this culture right now?
Well, first of all, I want to let your listeners know, Gail, how much I respect you and Tony and your family, and you're a great inspiration to me. And
Thank you.
I don't have a great brain. There's this stuff I've read, and it seems to be interesting. And the third is a great quote from Arthur Schlesinger. He was a historian on John F. Kennedy's staff. Arthur Schlesinger said, "History is to the nation what memory is to the individual." Can you imagine an individual who's lost their memory? Maybe they have Alzheimer's, and they don't know who they are anymore. They don't know who you are. They don't know where they came from, where they're going. In America, we've lost our memory. Here we are, the freest and most prosperous country that planet Earth has ever seen. And we forgot how we got here. And as a result, we're letting it slip through our fingers like sand. And so I feel, in a sense, by telling this the history of how we got here, it's sort of like giving everybody our memory back. This is who you are. These are the sacrifices that were done so that you can decide who you want to marry, where you want to live, what church you want to go to, and what career you want to pursue. You know, in other countries, in India, they have the caste system. And if you're born in the lowest caste, they're called the Dalits, you're supposed to take care of the garbage and clean the toilets, and no matter how good of a job you do, you can never graduate and have the social position of a Brahmin. They're near divinity in that belief system. And so people from the higher caste, they still to this day don't want to marry someone from a lower caste. You know, Beethoven, he was giving piano lessons to the daughter of a Czech prince, you know, Czech Republic, and she fell in love with him, and they wanted to get married, but she was not allowed to marry him because he was in a lower class. You know, here's Queen Isabella, the Queen of Spain. When she was 6 years old, her uncle was the king, and he betrothed her to marry some 40-year-old guy. Luckily, he died. Then she was betrothed to marry somebody else, and luckily he died. And here, I mean, finally she asked for the right of first refusal or something. But here she's the future queen, and she cannot decide who she's going to marry. And so in America, when people realize, hey, you get to decide who you're going to marry, you get to decide where you want to live, you get to decide. In Cairo, Egypt, the Christians are called garbage people because they can never hold a job higher than Muslims. And so the Christians are forced to live amongst the garbage, and they root through it all day long and gather stuff to try to make a living. And so in America, you get to decide what you want. You can work hard. You can improve your condition. All you got to do is it's up to you how much you want to study and work.
And then so, why is there such a movement to change history and to take away this incredible, great country?
Well, there's a quote from George Orwell, and he wrote the book 1984. And it is this futuristic book where the government controls everybody's lives. And he said in the book that whoever controls the past controls the future, but whoever controls the present controls the past. So you draw your identity of who you are, where you came from the past. But whoever controls the present gets to write the history books and tell you about the past. And so I spoke at a father-son banquet one time, and I had an 8-year-old boy come up, and I had him hold the ruler on one end, and I said, "Now you try to stand still." And I grabbed the other side of the ruler, and I'm like dragging him around the room like a choo-choo train, right? And then I get a yardstick, and I have the son hold the yardstick where he had held the ruler, and then I got his dad to come up and hold part of the yardstick, and then his granddad was there. "You hold part of this." And I said, "I'm going to try to do the same thing." And I couldn't budge him up. I couldn't budge. He wouldn't move at all. Why? Because the kid had a relationship with his father and grandfather. It's this picture of who goes in the prisons. Is it the people that know a family name and heritage and have family pride, or the guy that gets on the street corner, he didn't know where he came from, and he's pressured into a gang? And so in America, we don't know our founding fathers, and as a result, we're subject to peer pressure. There's a communist tactic called deconstruction, where you basically unhook the train car from one engine before you hook it on another. So you want to unhook a people from their past, from their heritage, get them into this neutral, and then you hook them onto your new communist agenda or whatever. It's in a sense like a sales technique. where if I'm selling toothpaste, I say a bunch of negative stuff about the toothpaste you're using. That stuff will dry out your gums. It'll rot your teeth. What are you doing using that? And you're like, I'm repulsed by it. And then you get into this NutriWar where you're like, well, gee, what are all the kind of toothpaste out there nowadays? And then I can give you my pitch for this tartar control breath freshener stuff. And you're like,
interesting.
Oh, okay. And so culturally you say, hey, all those founding fathers, they're a bunch of slave owners and chauvinists and bigamists. And you don't want to be like them. Like, ooh, I'm repulsed by them. Then the kids get into this neutral, what are all the different beliefs that are out there? And then you can give them your pitch for your Common Core, homosexual, Islamic agenda, whatever. And it's a, I was talking to James Dobson one time, and he talked about how the children are the stem cells of the next generation. So
wow.
What's stem cell therapy? They take a brand new muscle cell, skin cell, you know, to fat tissue, and the moment the cell's created, at that very slight moment, It is undifferentiated. In other words, it is not yet decided what kind of cell it's going to turn into. And if you grab that cell and isolate it and bathe it with hormones, it activates part of the DNA, and it can turn into a nerve cell or an eye cell or a muscle cell. Well, what he says is that what the other side wants to do is to take these undifferentiated children. They're brand new. They don't know really who they are in life yet. And you get them and isolate them and put them in a classroom and bathe them with homosexual hormones. So you can turn them into a homosexual or a LBG or whatever it is. But that's the goal. They want those children. And they...
Amazing. So you do an American Minute, right? Tell me about that.
Well, it takes all of this history that I've been talking about, breaks it into little daily bite-sized doses. So it's one story for every day of the year. And it's short. It has pictures. It's, interesting. Anybody that likes to speak, it's great because it has background. The little phrase I use is let history say what you can't. So if you're in a public school, you're talking about God, they're saying, you're pushing your religion. But if you're in a public school and you say, you know what, I want to quote from Democrat President Harry S. Truman's inaugural address where he said, we believe all men are created equal because we're created in the image of God.
So where can we get that?
AmericanMinute.com is where anyone can sign up for it. It's free. And I also have lots of books that I've done.
Well, I know that you have so much literature, and I asked you the other day, how can you sleep at night? Because there's so much going on in your head and heart, and you always have so much information. But what can you tell us about American history now to just sort of maybe give us a jump start with our memory? What have we forgotten?
Well, people say America is the greatest country in the world. I decided to prove it. So I spent several years researching every civilization that has ever existed on planet Earth. And I found some interesting things.
What are they?
One is that human records start around 3,000 or 4,000 BC. What do I mean? Human beings actually writing down human records. Writing, the art of writing, was invented in 3,300 BC. It was Sumerian cuneiform on clay tablets in the Mesopotamian Valley between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. Today, that's Iraq. In other words, they took a piece of clay, took a stick and poked in it and made little markings, and that was the beginning of writing. It actually started as an accounting method. You know how you do tally and you do 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you draw the line across
right.
5? And so they would, it started as an accounting method of kings that had all their, you know, barn and granaries, and they wanted to keep track of everything they owned. And so they had this accountant class. And so it was an accounting method, sort of like the Chinese accounted method started with tying knots and ropes. You know, like the abacus with, you know, little rods and beads. And so
right.
They used tokens to represent things, and they started making markings in the tokens. And so the writing was just for kings to keep track of their stuff. Then the king kept track of their decrees, their genealogies, some astronomy type stuff. But it was only the kings and their scribes. The common people, they didn't own anything. They didn't have any genealogies to keep track of or whatever. And so then in Egypt, they had their hieroglyphs that were invented around 3000 BC. And then you had China around 2600 BC. They invented Chinese characters and had 10,000 of them. And so you think of it, 3 or 4000 BC, and we're around 2080. That's 5 or 6,000 years of human beings writing down human records. And 5 or 6,000 years is not that long. 6,000 years is just 60 people living 100 years each back to back.
Amazing.
Everyone's met someone who's lived 100 years, maybe a grandmother. We're talking 60 grandmothers, and you're all the way back to the beginning of recorded human history.
Amazing.
And so what did I find out? Well, what is the most common form of government in all of recorded human history? Well, let's see. There's pharaohs, Caesars, Kaisers, Sultans, Tsars, Maharaja, Genghis Khan, Julius Caesar, Attila the Hun, Montezuma, King Kamehameha. It's kings. That is the hands-down most common form of government. And I think it goes back to the fall in the garden and Cain killing Abel and selfishness coming into the human DNA. So you put some babies in a playpen, one of them takes the rattle from the others. You put some kids in a playground, one of them is the bully hogging the ball. Put some people in the woods, one of them is the Indian chief. Put some people in the inner city, one of them is the gang leader. So it's sort of this Lord of the Rings. Everyone wants this ring of power. Each of us has this dictator DNA inside of us. Now, we keep it in check with the gospel, but it's in there, that selfishness, you know? And we'd even want it to do good, but once it gets in there. And so it's this hierarchical system where if you're friends with the king, you're more equal. If you're not friends with the king, you're less equal. You're an enemy of the king, you're dead. It's called treason. And so this is the norm. And as the centuries, 6,000 years go by, the kingdoms get bigger and bigger and bigger. So first you had cities, the king of Uruk, Gilgamesh, you know, and then you had Sargon conquered from the Persian Gulf to the Mediterranean, probably about 2000 BC. And then you had, Cyrus of Persia and Darius in 2000 years and 33 major Egyptian dynasties ruled by pharaohs. And then you had 5,000 years and 18 major Chinese dynasties ruled by emperors. If somebody wanted to break away from the emperor, he would show up with a 100,000-man army and rip the walls down around your town. I mean, they kept, for 5,000 years, China has always been ruled by a supreme leader. You know, now they call him a communist dictator. You had Alexander the Great. All the Julius Caesar, the Byzantine emperors, and the Muslim sultans, and the African tribal chiefs, and the Bantu chiefs. You had the King of Spain, France, and Austria. But the biggest king in world history was the King of England. Controlled 13 million square miles, 500 million people. All of India, 1/4 of the world's population right there. Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, British Guyana, Canada, and the Americas. And we're going to break away from this king, and we have no army and no navy, just a bunch of courageous people with faith. And so it was a miracle we got free. And so when our founders set up our government, they said, we don't like the king thing. Let's go in the opposite direction. So they took a power of a king, broke it into three branches, separated federal to state level. Then they tied up this federal Frankenstein with 10 handcuffs. We call the first 10 amendments. All our Constitution is, in a sense, is a bunch of hurdles to prevent the rubber band from snapping back into the hands of a king. They designed a system of government that would be slow on purpose, slow to making good decisions, but thank God, slow to making bad decisions. Anyway, where did our founders get the idea of the people ruling themselves? Well, yeah, they got some ideas from the British, Magna Carta, and they got some ideas from the Roman Republic and the Athens democracy, but ultimately they got it from Israel. Lo and behold, Israel is the first recorded instance of an entire nation being ruled without a king. When Israel comes out of Egypt around 1500 BC, they come into the Promised Land. Those first 400 years, no king. Everyone is equal before the law, male, female, made in the image of the Creator. Even the stranger living amongst you is under the same law that you're under. Lo and behold, Israel is the beginning of the concept of equality. That everyone you see is equal to you. There's no royal family to butter up next to. Everybody, this is the beginning of the thought that everybody's equal. And so Israel was unique in other aspects. They were the first country that had private land. All those boring chapters where they did surveys and lots and divided up the land. Where in Egypt, any land ownership is conditional of you staying on the nice side of the pharaoh. You cross him, he'll take away your land and take away your life. You know, in England, you do what the king says, he gives you an estate. You don't do what the king says, he takes away the estate and chops off your head. And so you really never own the land. In Israel, the land was permanently titled to the families. So if they got in a pinch and sold it, every 50 years it reverted back. This prevented someone from gradually accumulating the land and putting the people back into servitude.
What great wisdom.
Israel was the first country with no police because everyone was taught the law. Everyone enforced the law. Israel was the first country with no standing army because every man was in the militia. Israel was the first country with no prisons because the law said swift justice at the gate, city of refuge you could run away to. Israel was the first country where they could read. Lo and behold, in Mesopotamia, near the Fertile Crescent, the Tigris and Euphrates, they had 1,500 cuneiform characters. 1,500. Imagine memorizing 1,500 anythings. That's pretty complicated.
Except for you.
Egypt had 3,000 hieroglyphic characters. And the scribes kept them complicated on purpose as job security. They were needed to interpret these hieroglyphs. And again, only the pharaohs and the scribes could read. It was the pharaoh keeping track of the stuff. It was the kings keep. The common people, not only could they not read, they were forbidden to read. Sort of like in Virginia and Maryland, prior to the Civil War, they had laws making it a crime to teach slaves to read. Frederick Douglass, wow, the Republican advisor to Lincoln in his autobiography, writes about growing up on a Democrat slave plantation, and the slave master's sister-in-law was teaching him the alphabet. And the slave master walks in, yells at her, says, "Don't you dare teach slaves to read. They'll grow discontent and run away." He's a little older. He's in the house. He's looking at some newspaper, trying to sound out some words on the page. They see him doing it. They snatch away the newspaper, chase him out of the house. And he said, "That was the first, you know, lecture that I got on why I wanted to be free." And so if you're a dictator, you want the people that you're controlling to be ignorant. You want to dumb them down with like a Common Core type stuff where they go through the motions of going to school, but the goal is to have them not learn anything and just to obey whatever the public opinion seems to be. And so when Moses came down the mountain, he did not just have the law that gave them equality. He had the law in a 22-character alphabet. Not 1,500 characters in cuneiform, not 3,000 hieroglyphics, the crocodile and the raven. No, it was 22 characters that was so easy to learn, the entire nation became literate. It's the first instance in history of an entirely literate nation. And not only could they read, they were required to read because the law said that every person is accountable to God. And it all worked in Israel as long as the priest taught the law. When the priests stopped teaching the law, every man did what was right in their own eyes, and you had sodomites surrounding houses, banging on the doors, something about that behavior that's not content with just doing it on their own. They want to force it on others. And then the backslidden Levite, the law said the Levite was to marry a virgin of his own tribe. Here he is, Judges chapter 19. He's got a concubine, a woman he's not even married to, which means the Levites were not living the law, much less they weren't teaching the law. And so it turns into chaos, and all the people go to Samuel the prophet. They said, "This isn't working. We want to be like all the other countries. We want a king." Samuel cries, and the Lord said, "They did not reject you. They rejected me." So God's perfect plan for Israel was to not have a king, everybody equal, everybody own private property, everybody be blessed, and the priest teaching them the system. And so America's founders, there was a Harvard, the president of Harvard, Samuel Langdon, in 1788, gave an address. The title: The Israelite Republic and an Example to the American States. Our founders looked back to Israel as an example of a nation ruling themselves without a king. And it only works in America as long as the pastors are teaching the Word of God. When they don't, everyone does what is right in their own eyes, turns into moral chaos, and then they say, "Hey, somebody needs to restore order. We want a king." So we're moving back in that direction.
Amazing. So what is the solution?
Well, it's revival. It's repentance.
And what does that look like? What does that mean?
It means everybody individually has to turn back to God. God is an individual God. In other words, every blade of grass is the same, but it's different. Every snowflake is the same, but it's different. Every, leaf on every tree is the same, but it's different. God made us all the same, but he made each of us different. And that's because he is a God of everything, but he's also a God with a personal responsibility relationship with every single individual. He's got a personal plan for everyone's life. And it's each of our jobs to seek him. And so that means reading his word and going to church and fellowshipping and getting people say, tell me what to do. No, you seek God. He's got a plan for you. He'll tell you what to do. And it's going to line up with his word.
Bill, how do you feel about America right now? Do you think there's still hope for her to become great again?
I do, because God loves to wait until things look hopeless. And then he raises up little nobodies with faith and courage to do big things.
And thank you. So your closing note to encourage someone in this hour, in this culture, is to?
Go to my website, AmericanMinute.com, sign up for the American Minute. But also realizes that God loves you, and he loves you with a jealous love. And he's the groom, and we're the bride of Christ, the church. most grooms are jealous if their bride's spending more time with another man. God is jealous for our attention, and he's got plan A and plan B. Plan A is he blesses us so much we turn to him out of gratefulness. If that doesn't work, there's plan B. He withholds the blessings, and we turn to him out of desperation. So our goal today is to do plan A. Turn to him now before it gets terrible.
Yes. Thank you, Bill Federer, for your time. I so appreciate you.
Thank you, Gail. Tony, you're tremendous.
Thanks. This is Gail, wondering if perhaps you're thinking there's more to your life. There is. Here's a resource that I think would be an incredible gift to you. It's called Stuck or Positioned. It's your choice. You can find it at GailMcWilliams.com/tools.